first up on the High Velocity Radio Show, this morning we have Mr. Ken Robbins with Response Mind Interactive. Welcome to the show, Ken.
Thanks, Stone. How are you?
I'm doing well, man. We are delighted to have you. I got to tell you, I love your logo. It's gorgeous. It looks great on a shirt. But aside from having a gorgeous logo, what are you guys out there doing for folks?
Well, thanks. As far as the logo, I sport this wear all the time, these shirts all the time, and I was voted most likely to have a corporate tattoo in the office. So we're a marketing services firm, and we started out as an ad agency about 9 years ago, and we still do a little bit of ad agency work all on the internet. But mostly what we do now is we get paid to generate high-quality leads and customers for people, and we get paid on performance usually, and all that's through the internet. We operate about 90 different websites right now.
You know, I contribute to two, and it drives me nuts. How many websites are you part of, Lee?
Just one. One big one.
This guy's responsible for 90.
Now he must have a huge staff. You have a big staff, Ken?
Yeah, well, we've got about 50 people.
Yeah, see, so it's only two websites per person. That's a rule of thumb, right?
That's right. That's right. One of them has 2 million pages of content on it. So I had to put three people on that one.
Yeah, I think.
So has a lot changed? I know the answer is yes. May I ask it differently? How have things changed in the advertising arena and specifically with internet advertising over the years?
Well, it changed dramatically. I mean, 3 and 4 decades ago, it used to be that you'd have an agency of record and you'd hire them to do everything for you because there were only 4 or 5 different things to do. There was TV, print, and radio advertising, and maybe some direct mail. But now people think of incorporating internet into the mix, and the internet isn't one media. It's at least a dozen. There's auction marketing, classified ad marketing on Craigslist. There's 2 different kinds of search marketing, plus vertical search engines, banners. So the first way that advertising has changed is you need specialists in each of these areas in order to get the most out of them. And typically that's not located in one shop.
So if someone tells you, or an organization comes to you and says, we are internet advertising experts, that either is not the full truth or they're full of it, right?
You don't have to name names.
Yeah, I wouldn't totally draw.
Who exactly in town is just full of it?
You're probably right. It's very hard. I mean, I wouldn't say that we're in any way. Social media is huge right now, and I wouldn't say that we're social media experts at all, in any way. And I wouldn't say that we're great at email and database marketing, for example. We're okay at it, but there are people who focus just on that. So yeah, I'd say that it's hard to specialize in 12 different things at once.
But you're hurting all these cats. So if someone comes to you, you can help an organization think through their whole strategy and tap into this expertise in all these different arenas.
Absolutely, or in most of them, yes.
Can you talk a little bit about how it's changed from the perspective of your client? Because like you said before, the client was used to hiring one firm, so now they have to kind of have a different mindset.
Sure. It's more burdensome on the client, certainly, because they used to be able to just hire one agency, their agency of record, as it were, and pay them one large fee, give them one marketing message, or agree on one marketing message,
and then off to the races.
That's passed. Yeah. That's all managed on the agency side. Now it requires a larger staff, I think, on the larger scale clients. Because they've got to have someone in the internet division, somebody maybe even managing just the company that's doing all their search marketing, because that can be so volumetric.
Mm-hmm.
So it's more complex for the clients now.
Now, you said something earlier about pay for performance, which as a prospective client I find very attractive. As a prospective provider, it scares the hell out of me. You talk to us a little bit about this whole pay for performance model you've got going.
Well, it started because I found that clients weren't willing to do everything we suggested. So we can look at a client and say, you not only need to spend this way and buy the ads this way, you need to write the ads this way in order to make them more responsive and get higher click-through rates. And then you need to do some things to your website in order to make it convert better. And they weren't willing to do all those things that we would suggest. They might do half of them. And they get great results out of that half. But what I found is if I just build the website myself that looks like the clients or at least attracts the same audience, I'm willing to do everything it takes in order to convert. So I can improve conversion, I can manage the media money better, and if I can just get the client to pay me on the final outcome, I make more money.
Now, how do you define performance? Is it just people looking at the ad, or is it actually them purchasing something?
No. We start every day with one thought, and that is that the killer business strategy is to efficiently acquire a high-value customer. So I was chatting with Laura right before we came in to speak to you guys, and my question almost for everybody is, who is your best customer? What do they look like? What do they sound like? What do they do, and what are they trying to get from you? And if I can discover that, and there's a large prospect universe, then we get paid to drive those to you. You may have a call center, and we'll drive those into your call center. But our leads and our customers that we drive for you are expected to convert very well.
And then, but how do you define convert very well?
Well, a client will typically report back to us. Well, let me give you a specific example. One of our clients is Terminix, the national pest control company.
Right.
So we operate a website called pestexterminator.com, which that's the one with 2 million pages of content on it.
Oh, I thought you were just kidding around. You really have 2 million?
Yeah, absolutely.
Every
city, every pest control company, every type of bug, every type of solution for every bug and every pest and vermin in the U.S., that's a lot of content. So a lot of developers and good copywriters on staff. So we will, a site of that scale and size and that type of information is going to attract a lot of people on the web, a lot of traffic on the web. And we bring them in and sort of pre-sell them, answer their questions, try to teach them and educate them and solve their problem. But then we pre-sell them on becoming a prospect for Terminix. They'll fill out a lead form or call the phone number. Then we put them right into Terminix's call center, and Terminix will need to convert them. And they'll report back to us of every 1,000 people we give them how many convert.
Right.
So.
Wow. Now, when they get to the site, are you providing them right off the bat before they reach into their wallet and give anyone their hard-earned money? Are you providing, I don't know, tips, like here's what to look for in pest
Absolutely.
Control. That, so that's how you're sort of engaging them and getting them interested in the first place.
Sure. Just help people get what they want. You can get everything you want out of them. So, I don't need everybody to convert and become a lead for my client, Terminix, in that case. What I need is for maybe 10 or 15% of the people to just want more information. And then that puts them into a conversion funnel, if you will, and we'll give them more information.
But it's not Terminix.com. We're going to crack the code here, Lee.
Yeah.
We're going to take all this.
Is it branded Terminix at all?
No, it isn't. Well, there are on the site. The ad units are branded Terminix.
Right.
But I have another site, lawncare.net, which if you were to go to Google and type in lawn care, we've got the number one ranking. And in season, in the good months, in spring, we get 250,000 unique page views alone just out of organic search, much less all the other marketing that we're doing for pay-per-call and banner advertising, behavioral targeting, and all these other things. So we've got a lot of media buying going on driving to that website. They come in and they look for their information. We have a retired horticulturist who writes articles for us on weed control. And
so from the consumer standpoint, this is just another place to find good information about lawn care.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And now, is this website, do you own that, or is this your client's website?
We own it.
And then, so you're now funneling leads to your client.
Yeah, in that particular case, it's True Green Chem Lawn.
Mm-hmm.
Well, as long as they play nicely. They don't want to play with you anymore. You still got the real estate for...
Do you own the content?
Lawn care,
yes,
right?
We do own the content. Yeah. So I'm building, basically, an online magazine, a portal of information to try to attract that client's particular audience. Another site that we have is roofingandgutters.com, and our client is Home Depot Roofing in that case. And in that particular case, our client asked us even to take the telephone call. So I have a call center. I bring the leads in, prospect for them, bring them into my website, pre-qualify them, then turn them over to our own call center that then schedules the estimate for a new roof.
Right.
No wonder this guy walks so tall and probably
exactly.
must be making a killing.
Right.
But,
he broke the code.
He did break the code. And speaking of which, you mentioned search a little while ago.
Mm-hmm.
Talk to us about that voodoo for a little bit, if you will, because it is voodoo to a lot of us. So.
Well, it is. But, search marketing is so it can be so simple. It's deceptively simple. We've identified over 34 things you can do on the internet in search marketing.
And do you mind listing them?
Yeah.
For posterity, let's get it on tape, okay?
So I don't think your listeners will hang around. But we did produce a nice chart. So all these things you can do to improve the outcome of a keyword are great, and they're very powerful. But in paid search marketing, I think we have about 2.5 million keywords under management at any given time across all of our clients.
I think we have six.
Maybe you should have more.
Yeah. So what's great is search marketing is so easy for even a small business to do. My brother owns a pressure washing company. He only manages about 30 keywords, but it brings in most of his clients for him. So it's a fantastic place to start. And then there are other places for small businesses to go, and social media and other things they can do. But it all starts with just having a good website that's very clear about what you offer, very clear about the benefits to the consumer, and it asks them to contact you either through a form or a phone number.
So you've got these Jim Jammy websites that are full of thought leadership, valuable content. If I'm a homeowner, I want to know something about gutters, roofing, anything. I go there, then I'm engaged, and then there's a real easy bridge, a real easy path to do business with the people that have engaged you to work for them.
Exactly.
So all that seems to make a lot of sense to me. What I'm trying to get a handle on, how did you get into this racket, and what compelled you to make the transition from traditional advertising to using this kind of medium?
Well, you know, man, that's interesting. I actually sold real estate. So back in the 80s. And what I found is that I could sell a lot more real estate by doing things other people weren't willing to do, and that was knocking on doors. No real estate agents knock on doors anymore. But I went to a seminar, and I heard this guy say, go knock on doors to get your name out. And in that process, I completely turned my business around. And that, to me, sort of taught me the lesson that every organization is a sales organization. You know, you can provide B-level service and still make a lot of money by just being good at sales and good at converting people to buy from you. And so I find that marketing, especially direct response marketing and direct marketing, is basically just sort of large scale sales. It's a large scale sales effort. And I made the transition because while I was selling real estate, I met a guy who owned an ad agency, and he kind of pulled me into it.
Now, what comes first for you, creating the home care website or getting the home care client?
Hey, that's a great chicken and egg question. We actually, we have gone through and sort of specced out who we would like to have as clients in what industries.
Right.
And so we build websites before we land a client in order to show them.
So that's an investment in your part.
Absolutely. When I show up to a client, I already have something in mind for them.
And there's already traffic. There's already an audience.
Sometimes, but usually it's just the website. So they can see how it looks, the mm-hmm. quality of the content, the quality of the composition, and the type of lead form we would use to generate leads for them, generate customers for them. If we don't have that, it's just so vaporous. They can't get their head around it. But if I show up and I've got roofingatgutters.com, that's so obvious, you know.
When you reach out to these folks to sell them on this idea, is your first contact more in the vein of, hey, Mr. Terminix guy, would you be interested in contributing to our pest control website, or do you just go straight after him and say,
no, but
me a check?
I like the idea. That's a great idea for prospecting for new business.
See, he's writing
Stone.
That down.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
Aren't you glad you drove down here in the rain to talk with Stone, the marketing guy?
Yeah, one of the things that took me forever to figure out, and I feel like such a dolt, is business to business sales. And the first thing I figured out is that you need somebody really good at networking, because B2B. Success in B2B sales rests much more on contacts and them feeling comfortable with you, so that they don't feel like they're taking a big risk by going with somebody they don't know, much more so than, say, hardcore, straight up, sales and closing techniques and that kind of thing. And once we figured that out, we just started becoming pretty good at networking and, doing those things, going to Chamber of Commerce events, going to interactive events, going to industry trade shows, and meeting people and explaining what we do, and then, do you know anybody who needs this service?
Well, I suspect you're a real hero, or the conversations are probably easier for you at a Chamber of Commerce meeting than they are for a lot of folks, because you've got so much substance behind you that I can go home from that cocktail party and look you up and see some really substantive content.
Oh, yes, hopefully, yes, absolutely. And, you know, I find it to be, the pay-for-performance part is actually a very saleable story, because people understand instantly that we're taking the risk. And for us to launch a new client is, I mean, we make a huge risk. The combination of staff time and actual outlay is probably in the range of $55,000 to $75,000 for us to start up a new client, because we've got to build a whole infrastructure. Right. And we don't build just one website. We build a network. We may build 5 to 8 websites that try to attract the audience in multiple ways.
The sheer volume of the work these guys do is
overwhelming.
It is overwhelming. So you must have a lot of staff, or at least a lot of contract relationships. I'd be interested in what you've learned.
Are you looking for a job?
Absolutely.
Sounds like you're. Do you have your
resume
out?
Right? No, I am terminally unemployable, but I thought it was worth a shot. But no, what I'm interested in is what have you learned, if anything, about managing people and keeping them engaged and enthusiastic about the work?
Mm-hmm. Well, that's what I've learned is I'm still learning. I mean, I think I will be all the way until the point at which I retire. So the first thing is, there's this whole philosophy around manage by objectives and find somebody, give them a lot of clear things, meet with them on a regular basis with milestones to determine if they made the progress. And I'm not very good at that. I'm not that organized, and it's a lot of work.
I bet it'd be very time consuming if you got a staff of any real size, right?
Yeah, absolutely. We've got about 50 people, and I've got a good management team in place. And I don't even hire for that quality. Be really good and organized at project management. I love it when somebody has it. But what I find is that if I can just get the right person in the right spot and turn it over to them and get out of their way, then usually the results are pretty good. And there isn't a. I tell my executive team and my VPs that you guys do things in ways that I would never do them. I don't. I, in some cases, I don't even like how you do it. But you get the results and you get the job done, and I can live with that. It takes the burden off of me of having to make too many decisions and cuts down on meetings. So that's my simple version of managing.
I like it. I like it. You make it sound attainable.
Right. Get the hell out of their way. So.
You should write a book. Get the hell out of their way. I like it. So this idea of trying to balance something as involved as the work that you have, I mean, it strikes me that you have got to be an incredibly busy guy. How do you even try to balance that with your personal life? And if so, how do you pull it off?
I do. What I traded back from 20 years ago being in real estate, I had to work all weekends. So what I traded is now I'm pretty consumed during the week, and I get up pretty early, try to beat the traffic, get into the office, and that gives me a few hours before anybody gets in to just have a clear head and organize my day and get things done. But my weekends are pretty free. So I have 3 children. I'm able to spend time with them. I'm able to get out of the office. Having a great executive team in place allows me to get out of the office when I need to spend time with the family, go on vacations, and be at that baseball game or dance recital.
Do you do you have your kids on a pay-for-performance relationship as well?
See, that's a second great idea. I should. No, I don't. They're typical allowance and yelling. The right kind,
There's a balance there as well.
That's right. So what kind of clients are you looking for, and how can our listeners get in touch with you to learn more about this idea of fully capitalizing on response mind?
Well, our best client, well, that's great. That's the question I ask. Our clients are usually in one of 3 areas. They're either business to small business, so they're selling copiers, payroll services, that sort of thing on a national scale, or phone systems on a national scale, and we'll go out and we'll help them find lots of small businesses as leads. The second category is in the area of seniors. We actually work with lots of seniors clients, which is a huge growing demographic, obviously. I think last I heard 50,000 people a day are entering retirement. So we have clients like the Scooter Store and Liberty Medical and a spinal care center that deal with this.
And that demographic's not going to get any smaller, is it?
That's right. It seems to be more than a passing fad. And then the third area is homeowners, because there's so many things that homeowners need in order to maintain their home and protect their home. So any type of company with home services, home-related services is good for us. The second characteristic is we need the company to be national, usually, or at least a very large regional player, and have a good sales force in place. Now, that's either a call center or field offices that can track what happens. Because we don't want to just put leads in somebody's system. We want to know what happened to them.
Because if their sales process sucks, having you guys work for them, their sales process, they're just going to suck bigger and faster.
Suck faster.
Right.
That's
right.
Am I right?
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. We collapsed a call center back in 2003. We didn't realize the limits of one client's particular call center, which was probably 500 or 800 leads, and we were putting 2,000 leads a month in. And literally, leads were just laying around, uncalled. So what a terrible customer experience.
Right.
So, capacity is important.
So how do these prospective clients of yours that are trying to reach those markets, how do they get in touch with you? What's a good best way to contact you?
The easiest way is just to call us at 404-233-0370. Our website is responsemine.com, MINE.com. And, they can email me, ken.robbins, R-O-B-B-I-N-S, at responsemind.com.
Terrific. Well, listen, Ken, before we let you go, we have a little tradition here on the High Velocity Radio Show. We like to ask each guest, if they would, to share a mistake that they've made at some point in their career, and really, more importantly, what they feel like they learned from it. Could we get you to do that for us?
Wow. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. There's been so many. it's hard to choose, but... I would say one of the biggest mistakes I made was in the beginning in 2000 and well back when I was selling real estate, I worked in an area that had very very old homes and didn't have a lot of turnover, maybe a 3 or 4% turnover rate. And after 5 or 6 years, what I realized is that all of my clients were coming out of this very low turnover area. And if I had just taken everything I did, knocking on doors and going to a very high turnover area, maybe 5 or 10 or 15% turnover rate, I'd have made so much more money. Mm-hmm. The biggest mistake I made with this company is that in the beginning, I didn't move to pay for performance right off the bat. You know, I worked as an ad agency for many years, and we had some pay for performance clients. But I stuck to sort of that traditional advertising relationship where you're paid on commission and fees, and I didn't move immediately to working with my highest value customers. And I paid a price for this. We ended up having several clients that were services clients that we lost all at once. And I makes up for a lot of volatility in the business, in a professional services business. So I think that if I had just thought early on, what is my highest value customer that I have or client that I have, and work only to serve them and work on that part of the business, I'd have been a lot better off at this stage. But, you know, we're still in good shape, growing company, and I try to take that learning and give it to clients now.